The recordings have been started.
Thank you very much. I'll carry on with the roll call, Jonathan.
Yes,
if everyone could just answer when their name is called, please, so that I can mark it off. Brett Fawcett doesn't seem to be on the line yet. Ching Chao is absent, and he has given a proxy to Brett Fawcett. Jonathan Robinson?
Present.
James Bladel?
Here.
Jos Kieran?
Here.
Volker Greiman?
Yes, I'm here.
Thomas Rickert is not yet on the line. He might not be able to join us. And if he does, he will probably be a bit late. But in case there are any issues, he has given his proxy to Jen Wolf. Gabriele Schlack?
Here.
Tom Berard?
Here.
Ryan Winterfeld?
Present.
Peter Rindfoss?
Here.
Rosa Nova?
Here.
Tony Holmes is absent, and he has given his proxy to Oswaldo Nova. Maria Farrell is absent, and she has given her proxy to David Cake. Avery Doria? Yes. He's on the line. Thank you. Cake is not yet on the line. I do not see him. Magali Pazalo?
Here.
Amar Elstar is absent, and he has given his proxy to Avery Doria. Klaus Stoll?
Present.
Dan Reed is joining late, and in case there are any issues or a vote starts, Dan has given his proxy to John Berard. John, are you aware of that?
Yes, I'm tickled.
Thank you. Jennifer Wolf?
Present.
Alan Greenberg?
Present.
And Patrick Miles has sent his apologies. He will be absent. And for staff, we have David Olive, Marika Koenigs, Mary Wong, Rob Hogarth, Barry Cobb, Lars Hoffman, and myself, Glenn de Saint-Jerry. Have I left off anybody that has joined since? Thank you, Jonathan. Over to you.
Thanks, Claire. So we'll proceed with the agenda then from there. We call first for any updates to statements of interest, please. Hearing none, we'll remove on to 1.3, which is an opportunity to review or amend the agenda. Any comments or input there, please? I have 2 points, one which is a request from Alan Greenberg to add an item under any other business to touch on the board compensation public comment. And second, I am aware that Thomas Rickert is as someone who's worked substantially behind the work on motions under item 4 and 5, has had a problem joining us on time. So he has requested that those are moved further down the agenda to enable him to have an opportunity to join us. So provided there are no objections to that, we will move them down the agenda until Thomas has the opportunity to join us. Any concerns or objections with that? Thank you. So that covers item 1.3. We note the status of the minutes of the previous council meetings. Glenn, I'm just checking the posting of the previous meeting. Oh, they were posted 31st of May. Yeah, I have a paper copy of the agenda which doesn't show them as being posted, but I know that they are posted. And also, we can now welcome David Cake on the audio. There are no items on the consent agenda, although in reviewing some of the procedures before this meeting, I did notice, and referring now to item 3, the consent agenda, I noticed that technically the procedures expect us to vote on items to consent agenda, so I don't expect us to necessarily discuss that now, but it is something which we haven't been doing. We've been taking the consent agenda as at face value as a consent agenda, and providing no one objects to an item being on the consent agenda, we've been taking it as read. But when I look at the procedures, they expect us to vote on collectively on the items on the consent agenda. At least that's my reading of it. So I wouldn't mind making sure that that's correct, and we'll pick that up as and when items are on the consent agenda in future. Moving then on, so we will skip over items 4 and 5, these motions dealing with the PDP on the IGO and NGO work, and in addition, the connected one, which is item 5. And move straight on then to the motion under item 6, which seeks to close the work on the WHOIA studies and discuss any appropriate next steps. So I think in order to introduce that and provide some background, we're going to start with a form of update from staff delivered by Mary Wong. So Mary, if you're I hope I haven't surprised you by bringing this up as early in the agenda as it has come up, but if you are available, it would be great to get the update from you.
Yes, Jonathan. Hi, everybody. This is Mary, and Thomas was kind enough to notify me of his request to Jonathan, so no, I have not been surprised, not by this anyway. So what you see on the screen here is a document that staff has prepared that compiles, basically as a cut-and-paste job, all the executive summaries of the 4 GNSO-approved WHOIA studies. Not in order of their approval, but in order of their completion slash publication, starting with the feasibility survey for Relay and Reveal and all the way through to the fourth. These studies were all commissioned or approved by the GNSO Council, and I think there's a number of people on the call or listening in who have been participating in the background to all these studies since at least 2007. The hypotheses for these studies were developed in consultation with various community groups formed within the GNSO as well as the GAC, and that's where we ended up with 4. So we hope that the compilation of this set of summaries will be very useful to you and your communities as we go forward. Jonathan, before we move to the motion, which I know Volker will present, I know that a question has come up. I believe it may have been on the council list regarding the use or the benefit of these studies to other work. And one reason for that question, and others may have the same question, may be that these studies having been approved a few years ago, there have been updates and there has been other work that has started in ICANN relating to WHOIA since their approval. The most notable of this, obviously, is the expert working group, or the EWG, who is expected to present its final report to the community in London. So as a result, we went and spoke to our colleagues who support the EWG, and in that regard, we're very fortunate because at least one person has been working with the GNSO staff on these WHOIA studies since practically the beginning, and is also providing support to the EWG. So we've been fortunate to be able to tap her expertise. So from our discussions, the impressions that we've gotten are that the EWG has found these studies helpful, both at a general level and also more specifically. On the general level, a number of observations were made to us. First, that very early on in its work, when the EWG first started sifting through the problems and the sorts of issues that they might have to deal with, they found these studies, the bases, and the work of the research team helpful. For example, the work of the Who is Misuse research team in demonstrating what were the most common forms of abuse, or the registrant identification study that was done by NORC at the University of Chicago, showing the differences between domains registered by natural persons, domains that were used for commercial purposes, and so forth. They also found it beneficial that in the course of their work, that there was now at least a partial assemblage of data, somewhat specific, but still able to demonstrate certain factual and data issues that they had questions about. And on top of that, apparently when they had questions about certain things that either the studies did not cover or could not cover, they would go back to the study teams who were able to provide direct input. And the final point that they made to us about the general usefulness of the studies was that even in some of the problems that these research teams had, one common problem, for example, was simply getting hold of a certain type or category of data. They found that useful for their job as well. So I don't want to take up further time by going through how each specific study was helpful to certain aspects of the EWG's work. I mean, some of it is fairly obvious. For example, the EWG does have a part in its work that focuses on privacy and proxy services, and there is a somewhat corresponding WHOIS study just completed on their abuse. So there's a few examples I can give offline to others or expand on the council list, but I thought it might be useful for the council and the GNSO to hear this from the staff that supported the EWG. So since all four of these studies are finally completed, all the results published, and as I mentioned, you see the executive summaries here in front of you, it seemed appropriate, since the GNSO kicked off this series of projects with formal approvals some years ago, to have the GNSO Council also formally close this particular phase of its WHOIS work. And there you have it.
Thanks, Mary. That's a helpful background and sets the scene well. You're right. I mean, sometimes these things do get lost when they've been initiated some time back as to either the motivation and or the current benefit. I think there's potentially some use of this, and I don't know that you mentioned it with respect to the work of the Privacy Proxy Working Group as well. That's another potential application of this work, I believe. The other thing is, as far as I'm aware, is that some of this was initiated out of the quest that originated with the GAC. So it strikes me that there's something we need to do if we close this work off, is to communicate this to the GAC. I wouldn't mind any comment or input on that, and or if there's any other comments or questions for Mary or for the council as a whole on this, on the sort of background of this work or any other issues. Alan?
Yes, I think something to the GAC is certainly appropriate, and probably in the form of, you know, we believe, the GNSO believes, you know, that we have completed the work we started. If indeed there are new things to be done, the world has changed enough that we should start afresh. I doubt there's many people in the GAC who remember they started this. Those of us who were around at that point will recall the GAC came back to us regularly and say, why is it taking so long? And it's been a long time since that's happened, probably because it's lost from their corporate memory. So I don't think we're going to get any real objection, but I think we should send something back to them. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. So Glenn and or Marika, whoever is maintaining the action list, if you could make that an action on me, please, to communicate the outcome of this to the GAC, that would be helpful. And we can put some background in there, Alan, so that it's not lost. John.
Thank you, Jonathan. I suggest it might be useful for you to make this a part of the ongoing GAC-GNSO Council collaboration. It's a meaningful output that reflects our having taken a lead from the GAC and then driven forward in greater detail. And I think you could use it as part of that process to expand the relationship even beyond who is.
Thanks, John. It strikes me that the obvious profile place for it is to highlight this at the face-to-face meeting between the Council and the GAC, which I would expect will be substantially, I don't want to use the word dominated because that sounds negative, but a substantial component of the agenda will be dealing with the work of the consultation group, which is that which you referred to, I think, the GAC-GNSO consultation group. But we should also include this when we draft the agenda. So that's a helpful suggestion. So in a sense, that's part two of the action, Glenn or Marika, that really the first is to communicate this in writing, and the second is to raise it as part of the agenda between the Council and the GAC in London. All right. Well, that's a sort of preamble and to some extent an element of discussion already. Why don't we give Volker, as proposer of the motion, the opportunity to present the motion now. I can see from the record in the Adobe that it appears that this motion has not yet been seconded. So it would be good to call for a second prior to actually presenting the motion. Can I ask for a second for this motion, please?
This is John Berard. I'll second.
Thank you, John. We'll record you as seconding the motion. And Volker, then, if you could proceed to present the motion, please.
Oh, excuse me. I was on mute there. Sorry. I think Mary has already done most of the work presenting the motion, and I'm not going to read all the whereas clauses and move right ahead to the resolved clauses. But I think, and that was something that Mary brought up off list, which I think is important to amend the motion just a little bit by including the link to the document that we have just seen in the motion in the whereas clauses, just to tie that summary document that we've seen to the motion, so everybody will that looks at the motion will also be able to see a brief summary and not have to go into the whole final reports there, which might reduce the time and effort required to appreciate the work that has been done here. And I see it has already been included into whereas clause 5. Thank you, Marika. So I'm going to move ahead to read the resolved clauses here. The GNSO Council thanks all the research teams that performed each of the approved studies and hereby formally closes this study phase of the GNSO policies work. The GNSO Council encourages current and future community groups engaged in WHOIS policy work to continue to consult and review these results. The results of the approved WHOIS studies and to recommend to the GNSO Council any future policy work which may need to be done by the GNSO as a result. The GNSO Council requests that the GNSO Council Chair communicates the completion of the WHOIS studies and their results to the GAC Chair. And I think we can now open this for debate.
Thanks, Volker. Any discussion, comments, or further input on this? Seeing none, I'll just note that, of course, the third resolve clause does call for me to communicate the completion to the GAC Chair, so that's part of it. Yes, John, I see a suggestion for a voice vote in the chat, and I don't object to that. So the most convenient way to do that, I think, is to call. I note that Brett has joined us in the... in the Adobe. Brett, are you on the call at this stage?
I am on the call. I had some problems with Adobe, so I'm not getting any sound through it. So I called back in by voice. So can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you loud and clear. Thanks, Brett. So, Glenn, if you could just mark Brett as present then. Has anyone else joined that we didn't record? David Cake, I know you recorded. I want to make sure before we move to a vote that we've got everyone properly recorded. Anyone else joined that wasn't on the initial roll call? All right, thank you. So, Glenn, if you could mark both Brett and David as present, and then we'll move to a voice vote. So let me ask anyone who is not in favor of the motion to make themselves known, please. So, Glenn, if you could record that no one is against the motion. If you could, if anyone would like to abstain from the motion, please let yourself be known. No abstentions, Glenn. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Thank you.
Aye. Sorry, I was muted.
Thank you, councillors. So, if you could record that all councillors present voted in favour of the motion by voice vote.
Thank you, Jonathan.
So, that motion is carried, and we will now move on to the next item, which is item 7, which touches on the issues of, it's a broader topic that's been a rolling topic on internet governance issues. Specifically, in this instance, it touches on the issue of how of a cross-community working group and bottom-up opportunity for bottom-up work on dealing with the transition of the oversight of the IANA function. John, you requested to swap 7 with 8. Is there any reason for that?
It's a suggestion, only because it strikes me that the GNSO Review Working Party is more central to the work of the GNSO Council than the Internet Governance Issue discussion is right now.
Let's not break the momentum, John. I don't think we will. I hope we won't take a lot. I take your point that it is important, but let's see. I think we'll have opportunity and time to cover everything. So I'm not unduly concerned. So are you concerned about time, or that we won't have time to cover everything?
No, I was just thinking in terms of rational sequence. But they're both important. I've already distracted us enough. So press on.
Thanks, John. So let's just really, from my point of view, and I'll be interested to hear if there is anything else in here. My sense here is that we have the opportunity, and as you know from the previous council meeting, I submitted as part of the comments on the request for input on the principles and mechanisms and the process to develop a proposal to transition NTIA stewardship of the IANA functions. I submitted the point that a letter on behalf of the council referring to the prospect of community work in dealing with this, and in fact even presented the rough work that had been done on a charter for such a group. But really, I think the opportunity here is to just hear any additional input or comment that may have come from your groups, the different groups that make up the GNSO, on the prospect of community-led bottom-up work for on either, frankly, the transition which we are about to. I think we should imminently receive something on an updated version of the IANA transition and or the accountability work, and any input on support for, interest in the bottom-up work arising from a cross-community working group on this. So really it's an opportunity for any comment, input or otherwise for something which is likely, I expect, to be initiated by us in the GNSO in conjunction with the CCNSO. James, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Jonathan. James, for the transcript. And I think you touched on my comment there at the very end, which is that do we have any intentions or plans as a council to weigh in similarly on the proposed accountability framework, or at least those that comment period that's currently open? I know that various individuals and constituencies are submitting comments to that, and unfortunately, I believe the comment period closes tomorrow. I believe the reply window is still open for a little while. But I'm just curious as to whether or not we could undertake that effort at the council level, or if it's just more appropriately done at the constituency stakeholder group level.
Good question or comment. I mean, my sense is that to the extent that it's appropriate to do undertake some form of cross-community bottom-up oriented work on dealing with the transition, it's similarly appropriate on the accountability track. So whether or not that needs to be handled, I mean, I think just because the comment period is closed or due to close imminently doesn't stop that happening. It's not that that's the end of the line as far as that's concerned, but fire away, Avery, and I think your hand is up as well, James, again. So let's hear from Avery first and then you, James.
I was basically going to say something similar in that just because the initial comment period is over, in fact, we might want to take some of the themes that have been brought up in the comments, and I'm sure there'll be a whole deluge of comments within the next 24 hours before it closes, as always, and respond to them and basically reinforce, you know, the comments that sort of pertain to views that everyone in the GNSO and that the GNSO Council is able to represent. So I think it could be good to comment. In terms of another cross-community working group, they're always good to do. It's always good to do bottom-up work. In what sense we could get a group together and organized and actually do anything useful in time for it to be relevant is something where I've got a question. So I would certainly never vote against doing a cross-community working group. I think they're wonderful things, but I don't hold a whole lot of hope that we could put together and have much to say at this point in time, especially since there is going to be the larger, you know, steering group or whatever it's being called that will be put together on these things. But certainly it's worth a try, but I don't hold out a whole lot of hope for anything useful. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. It would be just interesting to clarify if you were talking about, in a sense, we're talking about the prospect of possibly even two efforts that are in many people's minds linked, I think, is this one is on the transition and the other is on the accountability. Were you referring to one or both in terms of your...
It's bad enough that it's being sliced and diced by everyone else, that ICANN is slicing and dicing it so that we're all running around with chickens without heads trying to figure out which of the particular tracks, you know, and as soon as we get comfortable with one track, there are two. As soon as we get comfortable with two, there are four. And I would hate to see us try. I think it's already a pity that the one cross-community working group we have, you know, decided not to deal with this issue. If we put together another cross-community working group, I would certainly advise that it focus on the whole issue, trying to understand how it all fits together, and with it all fitting together, what it is we believe. Certainly, we would have to make comments and whatever in the ICANN, you know, 2, 4, 6, 8, 16 tracks. But, it would make sense for us to have a single cross-community working group that looked at the whole issue to me.
Thanks, Avery. And to the extent that I'm involved in shaping that and working with the leadership of the CCNSO on any of this. That's worth taking, bearing that in mind. And so that's useful input. James?
Hi, James speaking to the transcript. I agree with a lot of what's been said here as far as using the comment reply period perhaps to consolidate or highlight or showcase some of the comments that are coming in from the various constituency organizations. I think that's an interesting idea. Unfortunately, I haven't seen anything recently on us coming out of registrar, so I'm not really sure of the status of our contribution. But to Aubrey's point, I am also a little concerned about the way this has been broken up into multiple tracks and that the linkage between the accountability efforts and the transition tracks are, in my opinion, are fairly weak, and that needs to be reinforced, and particularly if we believe or if others share the belief that accountability is in many respects a prerequisite for any sort of competent transition of IANA functions, then that should be made clear. And that, as a community, if we are, and I emphasize the word if, but if we are as a community unsatisfied with the staff approach or strategy to all of this, then I recommend that we do form a cross-community working group or reform the one that has already started and get moving on supplanting this current proposal, which I think is very heavily staff developed. Thanks.
Yeah, so maybe two or three points of information and comments to just make sure that we're clear on this. First, there was the staff-led proposal, for want of a better word, on the transition mechanisms, and that there was a public comment on that, which was, from memory, was email-oriented rather than a traditional open thread. But in any event, we are due an update on that, so it'll be very interesting to see how that's reshaped and modified when it comes out. Second, there was the cross-community working group on internet governance more broadly, and that group, as Avery referred to, is not picking up particularly and specifically the IANA transition. So in a sense, that leaves it open for a new cross-community working group to pick that up. And, there's been plenty of dialogue and prospective work done on this. So my expectation is that there will be that something will emerge very soon with a call for a group to form a drafting team and develop the work on this work. The question is that remains is then how that links into the accountability thread and this dichotomy or not. But I mean, I suspect quite a lot of that feedback was certainly feedback on that on that split, and be interesting to see how much these are knitted together in future iterations of what comes out. I'm not sure. I wouldn't mind some guidance. I'm not sure what else can be covered here. I don't want to go down too much of a rat hole here. We have this is just an opportunity to make sure there is feedback on this, on these topics and discussion on them at the council level. Whether or not there's a specific action to be taken now, I'm not sure. I hear a couple of concerns about the fact that these are split, the fact that we could potentially put input in the reply period on accountability. So is that reply period, can someone help me? Is there a 28-day reply period going to run on that? James?
I was going to wait for staff to respond first. Marika's saying it's 27 June. So maybe at a minimum, Jonathan, and I'm asking this as a group from the council, maybe we could weigh in and say essentially that these are important issues that we understand are going to be discussed in the upcoming meeting in London, and that closing some of these comments and reply periods concurrent with the London meeting might really impact the ability for folks to comment, and perhaps we should just get ahead of that now and start looking at an extension.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to take, thanks, James. I'm going to take an action on us as a council, which I'm happy to lead, but not necessarily hold the panel, and we can pick this up on the mailing list. So Glenn and Marika, if you could record this, that there is a proposal, we'll call it that for the moment, a proposal to produce some council input during the reply period on the accountability issues. Certainly one of the yeah, let's leave it at that for the moment, and we can pick it up on later. All right, thanks for the contributions on that. I noticed that Thomas Rickett has now joined the call, so I'm sorry to move us around the agenda, but I suggest we now go back to item four, which is the motion on the PDP, on the initiation of a PDP, and we pick that up in the first instance, follow that by dealing with the motion on the charter, and then we'll come back to item eight after that. Right, so to set the scene here, we have the we have some input on from staff on the presentation of the final issue report, a summary essentially to make sure we're clear on this rather complicated and multifaceted and fine detailed piece of work. So let me not dominate proceedings and hand over to Mary, please.
Thank you, Jonathan, and welcome, Thomas. So we thought that it might be helpful, as Jonathan said, because of some of the complexities associated with this issue and the background, to have a few slides to lay out not so much why you're doing the PDP, but what it might encompass. And we don't really need to get through the background, which I think everyone knows, but the first slide does remind everyone of what's happened to trigger the issue report that you requested at the Buenos Aires meeting, and that this was a consensus recommendation from the PDP working group that Thomas chaired. Given that it had gone to discussions about, say, the UDRP, which is a consensus policy, clearly that any sort of amendment, possible or not, would need to go through a separate PDP. The preliminary issue report attracted a number of comments, which we analyzed and reported, and some of those comments and a summary of those comments were incorporated into the final issue report that was sent to you on the 25th of May. So generally speaking, I think as everybody knows, the staff recommendation based on the background research, the public comment, and so on, was for the council to initiate a PDP. And it seemed important in light of recent discussions, including on the council list, to really scope out what this means. And here we have on the bullet point to emphasize that, as I think we all know, but it seems to bear repeating, starting a PDP doesn't actually, you know, mean a certain result must follow. So it may be that the UDRP and the URS should not be modified to allow access by IGOs and INGOs. There may be a possibility, for example, that other procedures would do the trick just as well. And one example that was highlighted in the issue report and that was picked up on by some public comments was that perhaps a separate dispute resolution procedure that's narrow and tailored specifically just to address the specific problems that IGOs and INGOs have might be more suitable. The other point that we thought would be useful to highlight here was that it's not about all IGOs and INGOs. As you probably will recall from initiating the first PDP that Thomas chaired the working group for, if that were the case, we're talking about thousands and thousands upon thousands. And as a result, that particular PDP also decided there only be certain IGOs and INGOs, and the question there was who would those be and what those identifiers would be. That was done, and so since this proposed PDP follows from one of those consensus recommendations, it makes sense to limit it to those identifiers that have already been listed by the prior working group. There's a list of these identifiers in one of the annexes to both the preliminary and the final report, and I hope in the email that I sent around earlier today, it basically explains what the scope of those identifiers are. as has been become customary as part of the PDP improvements, a draft working group charter was included with the two versions of the issue report. Nothing much changed in between the preliminary and the final. And I would encourage folks to look at the actual report for the specific topics and subtopics that we thought the council might wish to include in the scope of the working group. But one important point is that it seemed that further research or at least updated data might be necessary, because one of the comments that came up was, well, you know, this work's been done before in 2003, for example. A lot has changed since then, including potentially, and we don't know this, the number of IGOs that have requested protection under what's been cited as the legal basis for IGO protections. So as an initial phase of work, there is a specific recommendation that the required additional data and research be done. Other specific concerns and considerations that we thought the council might wish to include, and this is in the draft charter, is to not ignore the work that was done in the past, but to review it and to review it in the context of what's happened in the past decade or so. Obviously, the biggest factor is the introduction of the new GTLD program and the development of mechanisms like the URS. We also thought it useful to call out the fact that even though the UDRP and URS are similar, they're not exactly the same. So maybe they should be treated differently. Same question goes for INGOs versus IGOs and vice versa. And since there's already been some experience built up amongst existing providers in terms of the work of considering a possible amendment to one or both procedures, we thought outreach to those providers would be very helpful. I've already mentioned some of these other points. Certainly, outreach to encourage other SO and ACs and also the IGOs, for example, to participate, which they and the INGOs did in the original working group, might be helpful. I know James asked a question earlier today about what's going on with the GAC. One recommendation we had was that that particular question/dialogue be something that's tracked and monitored. And ultimately, we thought it useful to remind everyone that this is not the review of the UDRP or the URS. There's a report that's been requested for that 18 months after the first new GTLD is delegated, and so we're looking at spring in 2015. This is a very specific PDP coming up from one specific recommendation applicable to one particular problem. So it may well be more broadly taken up by that other review. And so that's the quick summary and scoping, Jonathan and Thomas, and I'm going to hand it over to Thomas.
Thanks, Mary. It's Jonathan. I'll just come in there and thank you for that, that succinct summary, and to remind others that, you know, clearly we're voting on in this motion on the initiation of a PDP. You've touched on details of the charter, and we've included the charter in the final issue report, as you rightly pointed out, as part of the PDP improvements. But should there are really two alternatives that could exist to dealing with that charter when we come to the next motion. So let's make sure we keep the discussion here focused on the initiation of the PDP, and then we can consider the what steps we might take, whether or not to approve the charter, and what the implications of those steps are. So I think had Thomas not been on vacation, he would have presented the motion. So let me give over to Thomas now to present the motion and then open up to discussion. Avery, would you like to ask something at the moment? Please do go ahead if there's a query or a...
Yes, thank you. I can wait until after the motion, but I was going to ask clarifying questions, not actually open discussion. So clarifying questions, if that's okay. So I want to understand, first of all, the issue of whether something other than UDRP or URS, that is actually a new topic that wasn't specifically recommended by the working group. That's an additional topic, if I understand correctly, that the issues report is recommending we include. The other question I have is on the use of the word identifiers and then talking about there being additional IGOs that may or may not want to be considered. And so the question then becomes, are those additional IGOs kind of like new ECOSOC INGOs that just got added this year? So the list remains constant. It's just that new names have been added to the list. Or is this an additional list we're going to? And forgive me for not knowing the answer to that already, but I just was looking at it and I wasn't quite certain. So those are my clarifying questions. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. So I see
the other thing was by identifiers, we mean the organizations that are listed. We don't actually mean the identifiers that were actually reserved at first and second level. We mean the organizations that were identified. And so that was somewhat confusing to me in the use of the word identifiers, which made sense when talking about TLDs and SLDs, but now we're really talking about the organizations on those lists. So that's all my clarification stuff. Thanks.
Thanks, Abby. So I picked up at least two questions there, and I know Mary responded immediately. I'm not sure if you're able to respond to both, Mary, but please go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks for the questions, Avery. I'll try and keep my head clear on this. And I'm ready to stand corrected by Thomas or Barry or anyone else who was familiar with the work as well. Your first question, that is correct, that there is an alternative here on the table that's neither the UDRP nor the URS. And, of course, should there be a PDP, we could end up with none of the above. I should say that my recollection is that this is not a topic that was explored in depth by the PDP working group. It was recognized that one primary remedy for IGOs and INGOs, once they detailed their issues and needs, was to use the UDRP and the URS. And there was not much substantive discussion that went in depth into what those remedies might look like, given that there was an assumption that the primary remedies would be the UDRP and the URS. With regard to the identifiers, apologies for the confusion. I think if I can mesh your question 2 and 3, and hopefully I don't miss out any sub-points in that, The answer is, I think, yes, with an explanation, in the sense that if you look at what the PDP working group recommended for protection, the organizations for the IGOs were the organizations on the GAC list. So there's a list of IGOs. The list of INGOs was the ECOSOC list. With respect to those organizations, however, the working group also noted that they would have what the working group called Scope 1 and Scope 2. And Scope 1, generally speaking, say for the IGOs, was full names, and those were recommended for certain reservation-type protections. And it was for the IGOs, we're talking Scope 2, it would be acronyms. So it would be acronyms for the IGOs on the GAC list. I hope that's helpful. I see that Thomas has his hand up, so maybe he has further details or corrections.
Thanks.
No corrections.
Sorry, Thomas,
Jonathan.
James is in the queue, but I suspect that you want to come in with further information. So, James, with your acceptance, we'll put Thomas ahead of you just to provide the further information and then come to you.
Please do. Thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan, and thanks, James. I wanted to add to Mary's explanations, which were very well, that the discussion that the working group had at the time was rather between curative and protective mechanisms for the organizations that should get protections. And since there was a lack of possibility for certain organizations to use the existing curative mechanisms, the idea was that rather than granting these organizations preventative mechanisms, we would grant very limited preventative mechanisms such as the claims notice and have a separate discussion, which we're now kicking off with this, about opening up curative mechanisms. So we are talking about UDRP and URS, as these are the mechanisms now in place for for GTLDs, but it may well be that during our deliberations, if this PDP actually starts, that it might turn out unfeasible to put the needs of the various organizations into the current language of the URP or the URS, and that it might be easier to grasp the essence of what we potentially might wish to achieve by just taking what's there with these rights protection mechanisms and giving it a different name and giving it a very narrow mandate.
Thanks, Thomas. James.
Thanks, Jonathan. James speaking for the record, and thanks, Thomas, for that explanation, because I, you know, joined the council certainly after that work had concluded and was not as familiar with that. I wanted to touch on two things that were raised. One was a point raised by Avery, and then the second was just something I commented on the list. The first one being that, you know, I'm also not clear on the scope of these protections, and perhaps this is something that can be explored as part of this PDP. In fact, is this creating a mechanism or a policy that would be dependent upon some outside organization or group that could, for example, change the qualifications or criteria for what constitutes an ECOSOC list or an entry onto that list, and then that would dramatically expand the scope of this PDP after you know, it had already concluded. And I think that that is something that perhaps should be understood, or maybe it's a question that is contained within this proposal that I don't really have a full grasp of. And then the second thing, going back to more of my comment, I think more of an operational question. We do have this outstanding work pending, I believe, with the GAC regarding acronyms. My concern is that as managers of this process, we should be aware that breaking things into multiple PDPs may seem like an exercise in efficiency because you can get moving and get things done faster, but I think what we're finding, particularly with the IRTP series, is that putting them all back together again in a way that makes sense when they're concluded, and especially when they start to become start to enter the implementation phase, becomes a bit more of a headache. And so any gains in efficiency that were realized by breaking up the PDPs are paid for on the back end, if that makes any sense. So I would caution against that, or just so I'm not seen as holding up this process, perhaps make sure that we include in one or both of these motions the or in the charter of this PDP that it recognize that there is ongoing work still outstanding on this, and give them the flexibility to incorporate that into their charter once that work is completed, so that we don't have to then go back and fire off a new issues report, et cetera. So that would just be one recommendation if we want to get going on this quickly, but still want to do, you know, not diminish the quality of the output on the back end. So that was one question and one comment. Thanks.
Thanks for both, James. We'll try not to lose those as we pick up on other comments that may produce new information or support. We'll go with those. Avery.
Yeah. Sorry, I apologize. This is Avery again, and I apologize for still asking for clarification. I'm feeling very, very slow on this topic. Okay, in terms of one answer, I think I understand that the work of possibly inventing something new other than URS or UDRP is a new option that has been added by the issues report, but it's logical, but it's a new element. The other thing I wanted to, in answer to one of James's questions, ECOSOC admits new organizations into consultative status every year. Not many, but some do get into full consultative status every year. So that is a list. The UN has a process by which it admits someone, and someone new does get on the list. Where the other question I still have that I didn't quite understand the answer to, in terms of the organizations that are covered, we started out with an IGO list built by the GAC. Now we have, there's the is there an additional list that we also may be looking for, or is the GAC adding names to their IGO list? And that is, in terms of the IGOs, is there one list, the IGO list, that the GAC may or may not add names to, or is there the IGO list and some other list that I've lost the name of at the moment? Thank you.
Thanks, Avery. I'm going to suggest we go to Mary and then Thomas with the opportunity to respond to these questions, and then we'll come to further on in the queue, which is currently Klaus and Alan. So Mary first, then Thomas.
Thank you, Jonathan, and I'll try not to belabor the point or rather take up too much of anyone's time. Avery, thanks for the question. I realize I didn't fully explain it, and I should add to the point about the alternative mechanism that was something that was in the preliminary issue report as a possibility. As Thomas and you have said, it's logical. In the final report, it stayed in because there were also some public comments that supported the alternative mechanism rather than an amendment to the UDRP and URS. And so in the final report, we do have to incorporate and take into account public comments, and that's partly why, at least, it stayed in. And with regard to the list question, on the ECOSOC point, that's actually one of the points that was already created by the original recommendations, because going beyond this PDP, the other consensus recommendations of that particular working group does require, for example, bulk trademark clearinghouse entry for some of the ECOSOC organizations, and there is an implementation question as to how does ICANN or anyone update that list, and that's something that the implementation team that's being formed by the operations folks in ICANN has been briefed on, and they're very well aware that we need to sort of figure that out. On the point about the IGO list, we are talking about the IGO list that the GAC presented to the board and the community in, I believe it was March of last year. As far as I know, there's no suggestion to add to the list. There's been no indication that that would be the case. That list has stayed the same, and the PDP working group made it very clear that that was the list they were going to work off of, and I hope this helps.
Thanks, Mary. Thomas, I'll give you the opportunity to, if you have anything in addition to add to that, or otherwise we just go straight to Klaus.
Thanks for the opportunity to add to what Mary said. I would like to remind everybody that a very deliberate decision was made at the time by the working group not to start creating ICANN lists for protection purposes, but to lean on third parties to produce those lists. But and this is why we ultimately picked, for example, the ECOSOC list as a source of information of organizations that would be eligible for certain protections. But I think that this would certainly be up for discussion in the course of the work of the PDP working group to see what potential changes there might be to those lists, and if there is the risk of this of these lists to be hugely broadened, then I think that would be taken into account by the working group, because there is no guarantee, as Mary said during her opening remarks, that there will be rights protection mechanisms. One of the options is that nothing's going to come from that. The second point I'd like to make is, in addition to what Ellen now said in the in the chat, the idea of a new rights protection mechanism other than UDRP at the time is not new, and this was even alluded to. I think we haven't tabled it extensively, but the WIPO 2 deliberations were discussed in the original PDP working group, and that also included the notion of creating something new. With respect to James's suggestion not to split things that could be worked on in combination, I would just like to remind all of us that when we took the unanimous decision for the package of IGO, INGO, PDP recommendations, including the one on looking at curative mechanisms, we did know that the review of UDRP and URS was tabled for early 2015. And we still felt, at least that, you know, I think we didn't have a huge discussion about it, but I think that at least my perception at least was that this was the bit that the PDP working group could not do anything about because it was out of its charter, and that the change of a consensus policy such as the UDRP would require a separate PDP. And we sort of put that, if you wish, at the end of the original PDP working group's work. And this is something, in my view, that promised to the community to complete the package of work that we've done, and therefore I think it would be just straightforward to continue with this work regardless of the current board deliberations and get this work done and started as soon as practically possible.
Thanks, Thomas. I just had a connectivity problem, so I can't see who's in the queue at this stage. I can see previously Klaus and Alan. So let me go to Klaus next.
Klaus has. Sorry, go ahead, Klaus.
Okay, this is Klaus for the record. Of course, we had in the past and recently huge discussions in MPOC about both motions because they are very close to our heart and they are leaving us in two minds. On the one side, we are very happy for the additional proposed protections of the IGOs and INGOs. On the other hand, we have a basic problem with both motions and actually with the whole process before is that we expect at least some form of protection or at least looking at some form of protection, not only for the IGOs and INGOs, but also for NGOs in general. And our question is, would it be possible to include possible protection mechanisms for NGOs, not expecting an absolutely clearly not expecting the same level of protection as IGOs and INGOs, but at least to have a look at it and to make these people protected and given their fair dues. This is a straightforward question. To repeat, yes, we encourage and we support any kind of protection of IGO and not any kind, I mean, this level as proposed for IGOs and INGOs, but we would please remind again that there are others and that there are, we should at least have a look at what protections we might offer as available. Thank you.
Thanks, Klaus. I've got Mary with a hand up to respond, I think. And then let's go to Mary, and then we'll go back to the queue. I see I've got Alan and Thomas. If you want to come in after Mary as part of the response, I see Avery's posed an additional question in the chat that relates to one you've made earlier. So let's go to you, Mary.
Thanks, Jonathan. Klaus, thanks for your point. I think that the point to remember here is that what you're suggesting would expand the scope beyond what was far beyond what was envisaged by the original PDP working group. So it may be something that's worth considering as a different PDP, bearing in mind James's point and Volker's about not breaking into too many bits, but that certainly wasn't something envisaged by the original working group, and this particular effort right now was designed as a follow-on to that, so it would represent a fairly large expansion. Thanks, Jonathan.
If I could, I'd like to add to what Mary said, that the working group, the IGO, INGO, PDP working group, when it started, had different subgroups dealing with various questions. And one of the questions was, what eligible parties there should be. So the PDP working group was looking at IGOs, INGOs, as well as NGOs in its deliberations. And the decision at the time was made that an international dimension of an organization would be required in order to consider protections, regardless of what exact protections that ultimately might be. So I think if we added this NGO subject to this PDP, not only would we expand the scope far beyond was planned with the unanimous resolution that we took, but also it would duplicate huge parts of the deliberations of the other working group, which was looking exactly at the question of who should be the beneficiary of potential protections.
Thanks. Alan, you've been patient. Let's go to you.
Thank you. I'm not sure how relevant it is anymore. I just wanted to point out, and I think it's the points already have been raised now, that the separate process was originally contemplated, and in fact a process was drafted to the equivalent of the UDRP for IGOs, and that whole stream was shelved because it was believed that the new GTLD program would address it, which of course it didn't. So I don't think there's anything new here. We're just reviving what was planned originally. And during the IGO-INGO discussions, we pretty well always said we need the capability of having these things apply to them. That didn't necessarily mean that it was the same process, just that the functionality was there. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. I've got a loose end, I think, from James's work, and that from James's point from earlier, and that's this recognition of ongoing work. I'm just wondering if that can be, as I put in the chat, I'm wondering if there's an amendment that can be done to the motion in order to cover that, so that James, go ahead.
Hi, Jonathan. James speaking for the transcript, and I'm thinking that. And I'm just brainstorming here that could possibly be more appropriately included as language into the charter rather than the motion itself. But I'm still kind of wrestling with that bit right now, but I think that's where it should go.
I must say that was my first thought, James, as well, that it was more appropriate in the charter motion.
Okay, so I'll hold off on that right now, if that works.
Well, I think we've aired this as thoroughly as we can and provided some very comprehensive background as to how we got to where we are, what the concerns are. And I note that Mary says that point is in the charter already. So, Mary, if you could just clarify that on audio for us, then how that point is covered in the charter, that would be useful. And then I suggest we call the discussion to a close.
Certainly, Jonathan. The charter basically replicates and picks up from very specific points that the issue report says the GNSO Council should consider including as the scope of the PDP. And one of those points was the tracking and monitoring of ongoing dialogue with the GAC. So the idea there being obviously that there's other things going on, and when the first issue report was written, the board hadn't even adopted its resolution in April with regard to some of the working group's recommendations. So the intent always was that there were other things going on that the group should not ignore, and the charter does speak about tracking and monitoring ongoing developments with the GAC.
Thanks, Fair. And I think a lot of us are having trouble following, because now that you mentioned that, I think that was covered in your slides even though that you presented. So thank you. Let's bring that discussion then to a close. Thomas, I think especially given the background that's been presented here, I'm not sure we need to go through the whereas clauses. So I would normally have asked you to make or expect that you would make the motion, and I made it in your absence, but given that you would normally have made it, perhaps you could read the resolve clauses.
I'm more than happy to do that as soon as it's brought up in the Adobe.
It is currently there. If you can't see it, I'm happy to go ahead.
No, unfortunately, I'm doing this from my tablet.
I made the motion. Let me continue. So here we have a motion on the initiation of a PDP on IGO and INGO access to curative rights protection mechanisms, which we've discussed substantially the background and context to. So the motion resolves that the GNSRO Council hereby initiates a PDP to evaluate whether the UDRP and or URS should be amended to enable their access and use by IGOs and INGOs whose identifiers have been recommended for protection by the IGO-INGO PDP working group, and if so, in what way? Or, two, whether a separate, narrowly tailored procedure modeled on these curative rights protection mechanisms apply only to protect IGO and IGO-INGO identifiers be developed. Resolve two, the Council requests that the PDP working group be convened as soon as possible to fulfill the requirements of the PDP in an expedited matter. Before we proceed to a vote, having had a comprehensive discussion up front, are there any other final points or discussion that anyone would like to make in relation to the resolve clauses? All right, Glenn, let's proceed to a vote by taking a recorded vote. If you could lead that, please.
Certainly, Jonathan. Magali Pazelo.
She said in the chat her audio has.
Shall I go to the next one?
Yes, please.
Eduardo Nova.
Yes.
Osvaldo Fortoni Holmes.
Yes.
Brett Fawcett for Ching Chao. Brett?
Yes.
Brett Fawcett for yourself. Brett, for yourself?
Yes, sorry, I'm on mute.
Jonathan Robinson?
Yes.
David Cake?
Yes.
Avi Doria?
Yes.
Ryan Winterfeld?
Yes.
Volker Greiman? Volker, are you on mute?
No.
Volker? I'll go on to... Sorry, was that yes?
I think you said yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Volker. Daniel Reed?
Yes.
Peter Rinfoss?
Yes.
James Lado?
Yes.
John Berard?
Yes.
Avery Doria for Amar El Sadal?
Yes.
Gabriela Schlack?
Yes.
David Cake for Maria Farrell?
Yes.
And we will go back to Magali, Magali Pazello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you, Magali.
Hello? Oh, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can, thank you.
Oh, okay, I vote yes.
Thank you very much, Magali. The vote passes.
Sorry, I haven't voted.
Me neither.
Sorry. Yes, Yes, now I see, I see. Sorry, sorry, there were some names at the bottom. Yes, Karen?
Then you have
Johan, can you hear me?
And again, his line must have dropped.
Thomas Rickert?
Yes.
Klaus Stoll?
Yes.
And can we please get Joas? Is he, let me see if his line's dropped.
Glenn Joas reports in the chat that he votes yes.
Is that accepted, Jonathan?
Now you put me on the spot, but I think it's reasonable. I mean, he says he was disconnected. He's present in the meeting. He's calling in again, so I think it's reasonable.
Thank you. We now have 100% in both houses, contracted party and non-contracted party house.
Thanks, Glenn. In view of the time, we'll move quickly on then to the second and related motion, which is the motion to approve the charter for the PDP working group, which in essence we have touched on with some substance already. So the motion is up in the Adobe, and it resolves that I'll just present the resolve clauses, and then we'll go to discussion of the motion. The resolve clauses say that the council approves the charter and approves someone to be determined as the council liaison to the IGO-INGO Rights Protection PDP Working Group. The council directs ICANN staff to issue a call for volunteers for the PDP Working Group no later than 7 days, and until Resolve 3, until such time as the Working Group selects a chair for the Working Group and that chair is confirmed by the GNSO Council, the GNSO Council liaison to the Working Group shall serve as the interim chair. I see Avery, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and I start out with an apology, and you'll see why in a second. While I was able to vote for the PDP because it was something that was indeed, you know, had a long history and such, I want to ask the indulgence of the GNSO Council to delay this vote by a meeting, largely because without all the discussion we had today, I was not able to explain to the stakeholder group what the working group duties and constraints and whatever would be. So while the PDP was indeed acceptable, I really do need to go back to just get the opinions of the NCSG. It's my inadequacy with a week. I just did not get it together to explain it adequately, and I would like to have the NCSGs considered, not that they tell us how to vote, but I don't even know what they all think at the moment. So I beg the council's indulgence for this delay.
Thanks, Avery. It's Jonathan. I'll make 2 points. One, this is complicated, and I think the best, you know, even those of us who have tracked it moderately well are struggling to keep up with all the details. So I don't think you need to apologize. It's multifaceted and detailed. Second, the purpose of a deferral is precisely that, is to, if and when there has been insufficient time to consider it adequately in the respective groups, that the deferral permits that time. And that's really as my understanding of the primary purpose of a deferral. So in my view, your request is reasonable and based on those purposes. So I have no objection. But I don't think that should necessarily stop the conversation right here, although we will come back to this. So just in case there is any other comment or question, I'm more than happy to take further discussion on this right now, or to wait until it comes up for consideration again, which now will be in London. I'll note, I think I understand the comments from Klaus and James in the chat, who, and in fact Volker, to support the request for a deferral, not that it's technically necessary, but it's nevertheless helpful to understand that there is support for that. And so I think that seems to be where this is going to go. All right. So there seems to be broad-based support. I won't read out all the names, but there's certainly, if anyone who's interested in the record can check that of the chat to see that there's support for a deferral to, and that that shouldn't necessarily preclude us getting on with calling for participants in the working group and so on. So thanks. We'll consider item 5, that motion on the charter for the PDP working group to be deferred, and that will give opportunity for any further clarification or discussion, or indeed both at the council level and within the groups between now and our next meeting. 20 past the second hour, and we'll move now on to item 8, which is to hear an update on the work of the GNSO Review Working Party. And just to make a point here, I think this is likely to be a standing item on the council's agenda. This work of this review is central and essential to what the repeated processes that go on. So my suggestion is that this continues as a standing item on the agenda while the work of the review team goes on, even if it's just for a very brief update. But as the person who's chairing the review working party, let me hand over to Jennifer Wolfe to provide you with latest updates and offer the opportunity to comment or discuss on that work. Over to you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jonathan. Happy to give the update on the work of the 360 assessment and the upcoming review of the GNSO. We had a meeting earlier this morning to finalize the process of providing feedback on the scope of questions to be included in the 360 assessment. Our next meeting will be in London in person to then see the revised questions and hopefully be able to see a demo of what the actual survey might look like. There's been a little confusion if any of you have seen the list where there was an Excel spreadsheet floating around. Some people thought that the survey was actually going to be done in that Excel spreadsheet. So just for clarification, if anyone has seen that, those are just the questions. The actual survey will be in an internet-based software solution where you'll be asked a question and have the opportunity to respond. So if you do see that floating around, don't get confused and think that that's how people are going to be surveyed. That's just our means of circulating questions at this point in time. So everyone on the council, if you have not yet reviewed the questions, to please do so. We do still have one more opportunity to provide review and comment on the scope of the questions and the language of the questions. We've been very focused on trying to make it as easy as possible. One of the things that we've done is determined that we'll create two versions. One will be a longer version. One will be a shorter version, which the survey taker can self-select. And if you select to take the longer version, you can actually do it in different settings. So if you only have 10 minutes, you could take 10 minutes, save it, and come back to it later. So we're really working to make sure that the survey that's put out there is easy to use, has clear language and clear instructions. So again, right now we're still finishing up providing feedback just on the questions and the scope. Our next steps as we meet in London will be then to look at the actual survey. How well does it work? What changes do we need to make? And then begin talking about outreach and communication to ensure we get as much participation as possible. And then our final step will be then to look at how are we analyzing this data? How are we conducting our own self-review of the data that we've gathered? That's a very brief overview. I'm happy to go into more details if there are questions or answer any other questions about the review process.
Thanks very much, Jen. Are there any comments, questions, or input at this stage? Like I said, I feel it's important that we have a regular update and the council is apprised of what's going on and that that goes out through the recordings to the, as a general record. Any comments or questions? Klaus.
I apologize for those who heard my comments already this morning. But in the NBOC, we are extremely concerned about that the GNSO review and that the questionnaire is really attractive, not only for insiders in the GNSO, and in our opinion, it's not only sufficient to make it easy for people to understand and to participate. It also needs to go a little bit further to make it attractive for people and to outreach to groups who are normally at this moment don't even know what the GNSO is doing. We've been, I think, and I hope I don't misunderstand it, that there are some outreach efforts planned by staff in this direction, but one of the points would be that if these kind of outreach efforts are planned, there should be at least some consultation with the grassroots and with the stakeholders before these things are going into planifications, because what normally happens is if things are planned, they will happen and just slightly amended. If things are jointly developed, we have a chance to change things and to make basic input. And that's all. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Klaus. Jen, would you like to respond to that? Jen, are you there? Would you like to respond in any way?
Oh. I'm sorry. I apologize. I was on mute. My mistake. Thank you. Yes, Klaus is on our call, so I appreciate Klaus participating again today. Absolutely agree. I think everyone's in agreement that outreach is a really critical piece of what we're doing. There's no question that that's a key part of our work as we go forward to ensure that we get as much participation as possible. I know there have been a lot of questions about how do we determine, who is answering the survey, and is there a way to weight certain answers more than others in the analysis. And so as we see the actual survey move into the functionality that it will actually be distributed, we will be looking at how are we gathering that kind of data and then how can we use that to analyze on a going forward basis. But absolutely agree with Klaus and appreciate the comment that outreach is very important and is part of our agenda for our meeting in London.
Thanks, Jen. And just to make sure I understood it correctly, but I'm not necessarily looking for a response, but my understanding was that a component of that was that, just to be clear, the survey will be distributed as widely as possible, but one of the concerns that seemed to be being raised was whether or not the language was in some way off-putting or not open enough. And so that was what I understood, a component of Klaus's point. Klaus, you see your hand is up again.
Sorry that I'm coming in again. Our basic concern is that normally when we are talking about outreach in the context of ICANN, it's basically that we are opening a door and expect all the other people to come in. What we would like to see outreach defined in ICANN in future, that we're not just opening the door, but that we are actively going out and calling people in and making clear why these things are relevant for them and engage with them in this way. And we just want to make this point again and again in order to support the legitimacy of ICANN and the Internet Governance Process. Thank you very much. And especially of the multi-stakeholder model.
Thanks, Klaus. Is there any other comment or input for Jen at this stage under item 8 on the GNSO review and the work of the working party? All right, we'll draw a line under that item then at this stage. I think just for the sake of good order, I mean, when we did that vote earlier on, Joab was disconnected and made his vote known in the chat. But Joab, if you could you just confirm or reconfirm that your vote was indeed yes for that previous motion under item 4, that would be great.
Sure, it was yes.
Thanks, Joab.
Thank you.
Just useful to confirm that for the sake of good order. Right, let's move on then to item 9, which is a brief update on the work of the GAC GNSO Consultation Group, which is a group which is co-chaired by myself together with Manal Ismail from the GAC And then on that group are a number of councillors, including both the vice chairs. I think it's just, again, it's something where there is ongoing work. It has potential ramifications that are reasonably substantial. It's, you know, how the GAC might become involved in the GNSO policy development process and engaged at an earlier level. So I think it's something that personally I feel responsible for updating the council and through the council, the GNSO as a whole, as to the development of the work. There will be a briefing note coming out in the next day or two that covers the work. It would have been ideal if it had come out and was planned to come out on Monday ahead of this, but there was some last changes. So you will see that ahead of the London meeting and covering the two different work streams that are being undertaken there. And just to remind those of you what they are, it's dealing with a form of day-to-day working between the council and the GAC, and B, specific areas that the second work stream has involvement in specific areas of the PDP and how that might work. One key development is that through the budgeting process, there has been funding for travel support for a liaison from the GNSO to the GAC, and there's work going on the what I would loosely call, well, the specification of that role, but essentially it provides funding for someone who would not ordinarily otherwise be able to attend ICANN meetings or wouldn't ordinarily be there, and to work in the capacity that of a liaison on policy, on GNSO policy development to the GAC. I mean, in principle, what that means is probably someone who is either potentially and perhaps most likely a recently departed councillor, but it may not be exclusively that. In any event, it's got to be someone who's very close to and familiar with both the processes and the actual work of the council, so that they can act as an effective liaison. So that's likely to come up for formal support in London, and that's probably one of the most substantial developments that needs to be discussed. Right, let me stop there and see if there are any questions and or comments or input from others on that group. Please feel free to do so. Klaus, I see your hand is up. I assume it is for this item, not the previous one, so if it has been withdrawn. Are there any other comments from others who are participating in that group, or questions from someone else who is not on that group, or who would like to make a comment on the subject? Either too late for some of you, too early for others, or too uncontroversial. So you can consider yourselves briefly updated. I hope the briefing note will do more, and you know that the prospect of committing to a GNSO liaison is coming down the tracks for formalization at the London meeting. Right, we'll close that item then and move on to item 10, which is an opportunity to discuss issues for the Standing Committee on Improvements. And a couple of things came up at the last council meeting, I think, and there's two, possibly three issues which need to be, we need to agree that these make sense to refer these to the SCI, and B, that these need to be scoped appropriately before being handed over so that we know and we have council agreement on exactly what we're asking. Now, as far as I could see, looking at the procedures, there isn't clear guidance on, A, the role of a someone who seconds a motion and what their expectations are, B, on how to deal with amendments to a motion, in particular how we deal with amendment that might be considered, in quotes, as unfriendly, in other words, not accepted by the maker of the motion or potentially the seconder of the motion, which is why that role of the seconder needs to be discussed. There's something else that Avery raised, and I don't know whether this is part of the same thing as well, which is this concept of voting thresholds. There was an issue around voting thresholds as well. So let me hold for a moment and see whether there's an appetite to, A, deal with these, clarify these points of process, and, B, whether anyone would be prepared to volunteer to scope out these two or three issues prior to handing them over to the SCI. Any comments or points on this? Alan?
I would be happy to scope out the one on voting thresholds.
Great, Alan. Thank you for that. I see that a couple of other hands have come up. I mean, in some ways, this may be simple enough that one can lead or hold the pen, at least, for the group on all three. But let's see what others have got to say. Avery first.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. Avery speaking. Two issues. One is the issue I brought up is really just something to be considered, whether motions belong to the people who made them and the seconder, or whether once made they actually belong to the group. Dealing with it would be trivial. It would change the process to where instead of asking the person that moved whether a friendly emotion or whether a minor amendment was acceptable to the motioner, it would basically be, is this a minor amendment to which there is no objection, a decision that the chair could easily make? Now, this would take writing and clarification, but if that was something that people wanted to look into, that would be it, and then we would get rid of what is sort of an anomaly. We could also decide that this is an anomaly that we're quite happy with. It's in the character of the GNSO, and it's been in our history, and you know, we're happy with it. But it does seem something that's worth clarifying, whether it's friendly emotion. I don't know why I keep saying emotions, but friendly amendments or declaring that there is no objection to a minor amendment. Either one of those can happen, but it should probably be documented. So I think it's worth sending the issue to the SCI. As the liaison between the council and the SCI, I'm certainly willing to help with, you know, Alan's writing of it, or had Alan not volunteered, basically, you know, that seems kind of a liaison-y type task to have taken if no one else wanted it. So whatever needs to be done to get it to the SCI, I'm certainly on the hook for doing it. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery, for the clarification and the offer. James.
Hi, thanks. James speaking for the transcript. And I guess I'm not completely sold on this idea that the treatment of amendments to motions needs to be referred to the SCI. I've only been on the council not even a full year yet, but I've been observing it for several years, and it certainly strikes me that this is not necessarily an uncommon experience, and that the council has always in the past, at least to this observer, conducted itself in a manner that was fair and open and transparent, and that the motioner or seconder were free to declare a motion to be unfriendly, or the seconder could withdraw their seconding and then someone else could offer theirs instead, or offer counter motions that were then resolved first before they were if they were determined to be unfriendly. So it feels like there are sufficient rules, if not protocols, in place to address this, and that there is also sufficient flexibility to rely on the discretion of the chair in those cases that might be ambiguous. So I guess I'm not completely sold on that. I'm certainly open to changing my mind if someone can point out a glaring problem, but I think that the SCI is, is something that we should maybe reserve for truly perplexing or intractable type issues. This one just seems like we've got a pretty good process already established. Thank you.
Thanks, James. And I'll just come in there and say that that's exactly the kind of comment I was hoping. I think we need to use the SCI judiciously. It's a great opportunity to, and that's exactly why I wanted to pose this question. Are these of sufficient substance and importance that we want to refer them to the SCI, point one? Point two, if so, we need to scope them properly before doing so. So the offers of to scope it is great. The question as to whether we do so is also very helpful. I see Alan's hand is up.
Thank you. I feel very strongly that the issue of the voting thresholds, particularly the threshold that would be used to potentially modify a capital consensus policy recommendation, is absolutely essential that it be considered. And if a change is made, it's a bylaw change, and therefore I think that has to go through SCI. In terms of how friendly amendments are handled, the council has handled it I completely agree with James that, you know, we have a long precedent of handling it if the motioner and the seconder agree, it's treated as friendly. That is counter to what Robert says, but it's what the council has always done, and to be honest, I think it's what every other board I've ever sat on has always done. So that one I'm very comfortable in leaving as it is. Thank you.
So here I have a suggestion. I wouldn't mind that we run this for a little while on list. And just, I mean, there's two different points here, really. One is making sure we have a common understanding of what is common practice. And clearly there is an issue to some extent with something being common practice but not documented. But at least if we've thrashed it out on list, it makes it clear that whether or not we have a common understanding of common practice. Just to be crystal clear on the voting thresholds, this isn't opening up the whole issue of voting thresholds. This is simply to the extent that a motion is being modified in an unfriendly way, what are the voting thresholds? I think that was the where this came from. Afri, you can perhaps remind me, but it's not all voting thresholds that are up for grabs here. It's simply in and around the modification of a motion. Alan.
Yeah, my recollection is what we were talking about has nothing to do with amendments here. There were two separate issues. The voting threshold issue was if we take an action as we did on Specification 13 to change a formal policy of the GNSO, to consider what threshold is needed to approve that. And my concern when I raised it originally was that if the GNSO policy that we're changing was a consensus policy, which it was not in this particular case, then we would be changing a capital C, capital P consensus policy with potentially only a 50% plus one vote. And then there are legal questions of whether registries and registrars consider that a valid action of council. And that's why I suggested that the threshold should be looked at. But only in that narrow case of changing a policy without going through a full new PDP.
Yes, thank you, Alan. Thanks. And I did conflate these two issues, so thanks very much for reminding me there. And I apologize for linking the two. They are linked purely by their potential reference to the SCI, and I had confused in my mind. Volker, go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me? Okay. I think Alan's just right here. He touched upon the right spot here. In the last council session, we have, I think, the barest majority that we can achieve voted to essentially eliminate one of the concepts that are a defining of ICANN, at least for registrars, from the registrar's perspective. And that was originally voted in by a supermajority and confirmed by a supermajority. So looking at that decision alone already gives me pause and lets me question if that's the right way to go forward in the future. So I support Alan's proposal that any deviation from previous policy, we should look at what voting thresholds that should be necessary for that if we don't go through a PDP in particular.
Yeah, thanks, Volker, and I think we're on track now then. And so let me suggest that we bring this to a head by taking Alan and Avery's offer to sort of hold the pen and describe the problem and make sure it's properly described and agreed by the council prior to referral to the SCI on this issue of voting that we've just discussed now. Second and separate is amendments to motions. We can discuss this a little more on list, see if we have a common view of what has become common practice, and to the extent that we are in agreement, it may be that we are happy not to refer this to the SCI. If we can't find agreement, or in any event, if it feels that it is something we want to refer, let's take that step at a future date. So two actions, please, Glenn and Marika. One is for Avery and Alan to lead the drafting of the referral of the item to be referred to the SCI on voting thresholds, as we now understand it. And second, for a discussion to be picked up on list, and absent anyone else doing it, I'm happy to lead that on a common understanding of practices with respect to amendments to motions. Good. So we'll draw a line under that item then and move on to the item 11, which is dealing with our planning for London. So, Volker, if I could ask you briefly to refer to the plans for London, in particular if there's anything you either A, want to highlight, B, want to ask questions on, and I have a couple of comments to make, but let me defer to you first.
Yes, thank you, Jonathan. Work on the London agenda is it's moving ahead quite nicely. We've had confirmations of time slots for most of what we have planned and whom we want to talk to. I think we still have to iron out for some of the meetings that we are having what we would like to discuss, in particular what topics we want to bring up, and we're in the process of discussing and finalizing these, but any suggestions here would be helpful. This is particularly with regards to the meeting with the GDD, the meeting with Fadi, the meeting with Theresa Swinehart that we are having on Saturday for Fadi and Sunday for the others. We also have scheduled meetings for most of the work groups that are ongoing. We'll be having something to report. We have a meeting scheduled for half an hour with the on the PDP improvements. And just a second, let me look at this thing again. We're looking at quite a full schedule again, but based on the comments, we have built in a couple of break times this time, so I hope we will be able to have some breathing room between the various sessions to just get our minds focused again on the topic that we are supposed to discuss. One of the things that I mentioned previously and that has now been confirmed is that we will have a very shortened session on Thursday because of the needs of the of ICANN as a whole, so we'll have a wrap-up session on Thursday at 8:30 till 10 o'clock. I hope everybody will be back from the gala with an open mind and be able to get up at that early time. Other than that, I think it's pretty much the usual. We do have our joint CCNSO council meeting, and I also would like to hear some suggestions for topics there. While we have some ideas, I think the council in general should be heard, and any suggestions are welcome there. Other than that, I would like to thank Glenn, with whom the planning of so far wouldn't have been so far progressed, and I would like to turn over to Jonathan again.
Thanks, Volker. I second it. I think we're in pretty good shape. I feel relatively confident with all the work that you and Glenn have done, so that's great. The council can expect from me in my capacity as chair that I will do two things. One, I will reach out to, in coordination with Volker, to Fadi, Steve Crocker, probably the GDD, and Teresa Swinehart, and make sure we open a dialogue with them over the next couple of weeks as to, you know, a two-way discussion of what could and should be covered in our meetings with them. And you can expect me to pick up some email threads with you on that. And also the CCNSO Volker, I need to check. There has been an initial thread between possibly the chairs of the CCNSO and the key staff support that I need to make sure you copied in on. If topics are already emerging there, I'll double check that. But certainly we can work together on making sure that there's appropriate and good content in all of those key sessions.
Yes, I think we have content for most of the sessions already planned. However, I would like to hear the voices of the rest of the council just to make sure that we aren't missing anything and that we are in bit that we're in good shape when we enter into the meetings and we don't have to discuss most of what we would like to discuss at the meeting, but already have that work preparatorily done on the council list, so that we enter the meeting and can spend less time discussing how we want to talk to Fadi, what we want to address with him, but rather iron out the details and have most of the work already done on the council list.
Yeah, agreed. We are on the same page on that, so we'll work together on that take as much council input as we can. Good. We are coming very close to the top of the hour now, so let me draw a line under that and move on to the any other business item, for which there are a few different topics. One, we had previously the opportunity to potentially put public comment in on the strategic plan. We haven't done anything. We could ask for an extension. I don't recall when exactly that deadline is. I mean, really, there are things like, do we want to comment in particular on things that affect the GNSO, for example, resourcing the policy function? So I would love to have any comment or input. There probably isn't the opportunity for too much now within the meeting, but if anyone feels strongly that we could do something there and feels that they've got the energy and ability to pick that up, it may well be appropriate to review that strategic plan and think about any relevant council input. Second, there is an item on who is requirements and national law conflicts procedures review. I think we are expecting a staff paper on that. Thanks, Marika. I note the public forum on strategic plan closes 27th of June. So there is opportunity to comment there. We do need... Marika, thank you. So you highlight that the WHO is requirements and national law conflicts. The staff paper is already out, so I'll just draw your attention to that. Marika has kindly put the link to that in the chat. Third point under AOB is the need... or at least the possibility of a liaison to the THIC, who is PDP implementation team. I think a question mark whether we could ask Amar to do that, since I think he worked on the original team. Now, Amar doesn't happen to be on the call, so I don't know if there is anyone else who's likely to volunteer. I can pick that up on the list with him. Ah, he is already a member of the implementation review team, so it may make sense that he is the liaison. So I will pick that up with him, and in the age-old tradition of volunteering someone who isn't present, unless there's someone who is present who desperately would like to do that, I think we can at least provisionally volunteer Anna. Alan, I know you had a point you raised at the outset of the meeting that you wanted to bring up, so let me defer to you for that.
Yes, thank you very much. I just wanted to call attention to the email I sent, I guess, last night or earlier today, on the public currently open public comment on board compensation. Given the problems that we have in attracting dedicated workers to our policy processes and ones that come back a second and a third time, and the burnout problems we have, I think it's close to unconscionable for the board to tweak their compensation rules without any action or any even intent of looking at actions to reward in various ways dedicated volunteers. I just think that they're putting their priorities in the wrong place. And I'm, you know, although I'd be delighted to take a salary for the work I do, we're not talking about, you know, paying money, but there's lots of other ways to tell people they're appreciated other than just giving them a certificate and a blue folder when they're leaving, which is right now the only way that volunteers tend to be shown any appreciation. So I call attention to that. If anyone agrees with me, additional comments in the public comment period may be appropriate and perhaps get some action. Thank you.
Thanks. I see Klaus has put a hand up, possibly in response to this point. Klaus, go ahead.
Yeah, I seconded on the list Alan's proposal and his motion. He's exactly right. I only want to add that, for example, IPOID have very lively discussions with my own board, which is basically observing how much time I'm spending on ICANN-related things, and I'm not actually taking care of my own membership. And I'm getting more and more into deep water because of this. And I think we need, especially what I like on Alan's proposal, that it doesn't have to be financial rewards. There are other ways how to make our life a little bit easier, and we really should look at it, and the board should abstain from raising their own compensation before they actually taking care of the ground troops. Thank you again, Alan, for making that comment and taking the initiative.
I'll make a comment there as well, and I think this may be something, it's not absolutely connected, although I understand the connection Alan's made about the link to the board compensation, but certainly there is a closely related issue, and that is the extent to which we are relying or over-relying on hours and hours and hours of volunteer time. And I think that this came up in the so-called SOAC leadership call that was held with Fadi earlier, approximately Thursday last week, as I recall, a week ago, and there's definitely that. I think that's one theme that we can expect to see, and it may be something we want to take up in one or more fora with the board or study in London. So that's certainly something. As I say, I'm not necessarily linking that to compensation, but there's certainly a connected point there.
Jonathan, it's Alan. I want to make clear that, you know, again, money would be nice, but this is being raised in the compensation discussion as compensation for the board in light of should they be doing this to fix their own problems without attempting to address the others. So some people have misunderstood because it comes under the title of compensation. That's not really the thrust. The thrust is tell volunteers they matter and tell them in ways that are substantive and real. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan, and recognize the amount of work that's being done.
Indeed.
All right. Unless there are any other items, I think we've come to both the top of the hour and the end of the agenda, so I think we're in good shape to call the meeting to a close. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for attending. I'm very much looking forward to seeing you all in person in London. I will continue to work on a number of items on list in the meantime and work together with Volker and Glenn to plan out the face-to-face meetings that will take place there. Thanks, everyone. Good night from my time zone, and good luck with the rest of your day, those of you who have some more to go.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.